This is the Frickin' Awesome Entrepreneur Podcast, session 15.
Welcome to the Frickin' Awesome Entrepreneur Podcast with Alyssa Dare Nelson, where we blow up the myth that you're meant to be well-rounded and independent. Here, we uncover what makes you uniquely awesome while also giving you actionable insights in to fill those gaps of the not-so-awesome. You are perfectly lopsided. Own it. Now let's dive in.
Well, hello, hello. Welcome to the Frickin' Awesome Entrepreneur. This is one of our success story episodes, and I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest today. If you've never listened to the Frickin' Awesome Entrepreneur before, my name is Alyssa Dare Nelson, and I'm so glad you're here. And in case no one's told you today, you are freaking awesome. So let me get right into it and introduce you to our guest today. Our guest is Hal Elrod. Hal Elrod is best known for being the author of the number one best-selling book, The Miracle Morning. Now, here's what's interesting about The Miracle Morning is that The Miracle Morning has been translated now into 24 different languages. It is truly a global movement. And just in the Facebook community alone, there's something like 130 or 130,000 people. This is a global movement, you guys. Now, with the paperback alone on Amazon, there are 2,264 five-star reviews. That's just for The Miracle Morning, the original. There's also 11, 12, 13, 10.
10 books in the series.
Other books in the series, but then we've got the journal and companion journals and all sorts of things. There's really so much that goes along with this. And the funny thing is that Hal will say, gosh, you know, it's sort of a simple concept, which I think is actually the glory over it. Now, Hal's story started when he was 20 years old. And he was actually hit head on by a drunk driver. So all together, all told, we've got like 140 miles an hour of collision. And he ended up dead on the side of the road. Heart stopped on the side of the road for 6 minutes. He not only came out of that, but he became an ultra marathoner. And if you don't know what an ultra marathon is, it is double the length of a regular marathon, 52 miles. He's a keynote speaker. He is inspirational to anybody and everybody that he comes in contact with, and you are in for a treat today. So Hal, I'll finally talk. I'm done gushing, I promise. Well, maybe not. But
thanks for the freaking awesome intro.
You are welcome. You are welcome. Now, one of the things that I love is the StrengthsFinder profile. And the reason that I do is that when I was going through my journey of trying to figure out what was wrong with me, the StrengthsFinder profile was something that gave me sort of concrete evidence that there were things that were right with me. And so I ask all of my guests to take the StrengthsFinder profile. You were no exception to that. And so you've just recently taken it.
Yes.
And do you mind if I read your top five?
Sure. No, I'm all for it.
So the number one was not a surprise to me at all. It is positivity. Number two, belief. Number three, maximizer. Number four, connectedness. Number five, developer. So Hal, when you took the profile and these five themes came up for you, did any of them surprise you at all?
No, none of them surprised me. And I love the entire concept of the StrengthsFinder in that I'm a big believer that you focus on your strengths, amplify your strengths, and then your weaknesses, you hire someone to replace to take care of those, right? But I mean, in all seriousness, just for me, I used to focus on what was wrong with me, like so many of us do, and trying to fix what was wrong. When we've all got these gifts and this genius within us, that if we invested time in getting our genius out there, amplifying those gifts, deepening, developing those gifts, that's what the world wants from us. It doesn't want us to you know, go from being crappy in a few areas to mediocre in those areas because we worked on them. It wants our, you know, it wants our genius and our gifts, and that's where the magic and the miracles happen. That's where we earn, you know, the money that we want to earn. That's where we make the impact in the world we want to make. Is again by giving our gifts to the world. And so I love that the StrengthsFinder helps you really identify and clarify and articulate what those are for you. So I'm a fan.
Yeah. And, you know, something that people often do is like, well, but we have these weaknesses and I need to fix them. And what's ironic is that 2/3 of our weaknesses actually are rooted in our strengths or in our strength themes, because they are the things that are, that come easiest for us. And so if we are under stress or we get triggered or upset, we tend to just sort of double down on our strengths. And so we hit that easy button over and over again. And it's like the radio being turned up way too loud and suddenly the music isn't good anymore. So it's not about, you know, fixing your weaknesses. It is about strengthening your innate themes, your innate strengths, but it's also about optimizing who you are and not fixing and turning into somebody else. Like, it really is being a better version of yourself day in, day out. So the only person that you're sort of competing with or comparing to is, how am I in comparison to myself yesterday? Like, am I a better version of myself yesterday? I'm optimizing those strengths. And for the areas of non-strengths, the one third that's left over after we take care of our overuse and we take care of our underuse. So sometimes we get upset or we get sort of fried and we shut down our strengths. And so we can go into these underuse patterns of our strength themes as well, which is super interesting. You get rid of those things and you only have one third of your original weaknesses to even figure out how to mitigate, you know, to delegate to somebody else or to create a process for. And so it really is freeing. And there's so much self-compassion I find with people when they realize, oh, these are my strengths. Gosh, I can quit beating myself up because of this or that or this other thing that I may not be. So collaboration, I know, Hal, is one of the biggest things for you, which makes sense with your positivity and your connectedness. And for instance, a couple of years ago, and this was the first time I ever met Hal, he gathered together 200 plus people from the Miracle Morning community to say, hey guys, what's next for this movement? You know, you didn't wall up in some office with, you know, two of your buddies to go, okay guys, what are we doing next? You're like, this needs to be a community movement. So I know that collaboration is really important to you. As you already talked about, you know, delegate what you're not good at. So here's my question, because it's really easy for people who are maybe still sole entrepreneurs and they're in this donut hole, right? Like they've now officially run out of time. Oh, and by the way, they don't have the budget yet. And so they don't feel like they can hire anybody out. What did you do before you could afford to delegate out? Or did you recognize the value of it so early and just do it anyway and then create the revenue as soon as you hired that person?
Yeah, well, for me, once I got to the point where my business I felt like was ready to grow, and it was, I was wearing, like all new entrepreneurs, wearing every hat. I was doing my own website design and, you know, my own email marketing and you name it. I started with an intern, and this is what I recommend to people, entrepreneurs that are, you know, trying to, you know, want to grow your business, or which, I mean, any entrepreneur is growing their business, but really to free up your time. And, you know, there's a great book called The 80-20 Rule, which is the idea that, you know, that 80% of the results that you generate are from 20% of your efforts, give or take. And it could be 90-10. It's not an exact science, but it is pretty darn close. And so kind of doing that analysis, I went, okay, what are all the activities that I do that take my time that either I'm not good at because they're not utilizing my strengths, or I don't enjoy. And I started with an intern and who now is my full-time director of operations, Tiffany Swinehart. You know, she's a freaking rock star.
She's amazing.
You know, and I pray that everyone could be as lucky as I was to have your first intern be like the most perfect employee. But the beauty of it was, I encourage anybody, any entrepreneur to, you know, go look at your local college, reach out and say, hey, how did your internship program work? Here's my business. Here's what I do. You know, any business major would be a good fit for, or communications major, or, you know, depending on what your business is. But the beauty of that is, I think that people, a lot of pressure is on an entrepreneur, because when you hire, if you hire someone to delegate things to, an assistant, well, you know, that's how Tiffany started as my assistant. What ends up happening is, it creates a lot of pressure and stress, I think, because I'm paying this person and like bringing someone onto your team, that's a total skill to manage that person and to effectively delegate and to hold them accountable. Right. I mean, and it created a lot of stress. In fact, it can create a lot of stress, where it even created a lot of stress for me, and I wasn't paying Tiffany, but going, oh, Tiffany's going to be here in 10 minutes. What in the hell am I going to have her do today? Right. So, but it's better to me to have that, you know, stress minimized, because you're not paying that person. So you're not feeling like every hour I'm paying this person and I don't know how to help them maximize the hour yet. Because, and I told Tiffany on day one, and this is a really important tip. I said, Tiffany, you're the first, you know, person I'm bringing onto my team. You're the first assistant. And so this is really going to be a collaborative co-creation of your role. I'll be very transparent. I don't know, you know, I've never managed somebody before. So this is going to be, so I was just really vulnerable and open and authentic with her. And she's like, got it. You know, I totally understand. And then that took a lot of pressure off of me, right? When she was like, oh, okay, you don't know, you don't have it all figured out yet. You actually are going to figure it out as we go along. And I'm going to try to help you figure it out. Right.
Yeah.
And so that was it. So she was an intern for 3 months, I think. And then at the end of the internship, I said, you're a rock star. I want to hire you. And I think I started her at like $12 an hour. And then that went to like a 30 something thousand dollar salary position. And then that, you know, it's, and now it's, I don't know, it just keeps going up, if you will. Yeah. So that's how I'd encourage someone to start delegating is get an intern. And that is a, you know, a free intern that you don't actually have to pay for. And the beauty of that too, is you're testing them as an employee. You know, if Tiffany would have not been a good, you know, not been good as an intern, I would have not offered her a paid position, right? I would have gone and I would have looked for another intern, and then I would have, right, tested that out and then looking for the right one to offer that full-time position to.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I was just talking to a client about this because he's looking to hire his first assistant. And he's got developer, and he's got empathy, and he's got, you know, all these really relationship building themes where he just wants to help people sort of get to their next level, right? And so I said, here's the deal, is that you've got this giant heart, and it's really important that when you bring someone on, it's for a trial period.
Yep.
Like that trial period. And what it does is it gets all the expectations out in the open, right? So that at the end of the time, you can say, hey, this worked, or hey, this didn't work, and kind of move on from there. And it doesn't lock you down to feeling like, okay, I am responsible for this person. So I think that that's a really, really great tip, is hire them as an intern or as a trial, something that says that we're going to reevaluate in X period of time, so that, you know, we know if it's a good fit for both of us, because it has to be a good fit for both. So when you look at the things that you are areas of non-strength for you, Hal, what are some of those things that are areas of non-strength? Because we, looking from the outside, and I know that your whole community feels this way about you, they're like, wow, like, you know, he tackles cancer, and he tackles getting hit by a car, and he's got, you know, he tackles all these things, and it looks from the outside like nothing can faze you. And while, you know, you've got this driving, passionate positivity that does, and you've got this rule, this 5-minute rule, if it doesn't matter in 5 years, then it shouldn't matter in 5 minutes. I'm not giving it any more negative energy, negative time. I'm just going to move beyond it. But what are areas of non-strength that come up for you that you know what, this has got to be something that I give to somebody else?
Yeah, my short-term memory is a big one. When I was 20, as you mentioned, I was hit head-on by the drunk driver, and I suffered permanent brain damage. And so it affects my short-term memory, and it affects my judgment or inhibitions, meaning I'll act real very quickly without thinking, or I'll say something that, you know, is a shoot from the hip, and it may be inappropriate or offensive to someone. I don't mean it that way, but it just comes out. So short-term memory is a real challenge for me, and it has been. And I've used affirmations to kind of combat it, you know, or to mm-hmm. improve it, but which have been effective. And I kind of joke, my memory, everybody has a bad short-term memory. I just have a good excuse and some dramatic pictures that kept me off the hook for anything. But for me, I married a woman with a really great memory. Right. Tiffany's got a phenomenal memory. But the biggest thing for that is just, I use technology, you know. I don't know what I'm doing day to day until I wake up and look at my calendar, or the night before I look at my calendar. I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow, you know, until I really look. And so I've been able to use technology with, using an online calendar and an app on my phone. I use a calendar called Fantastical, or an app called Fantastical, and it's on the computer, it's on the phone. And then I set 6 reminders usually for anything I do, you know, it's like, and depending on the thing, if it's something I need to really prepare for, to be like, all right, I'll set a 3-day reminder, and then a 2-day, and then a 1-day, and then a 6-hour, and then a 3-hour, and then a 1-hour, you know? And that's my process for every single thing I put in my calendar is I set usually whatever the max amount of reminders that I think it's six that it allows me to set. I'm very ADHD. So answering emails is, I don't know if that's because of the ADHD, but it's just that's a real challenge for me. I also, part of it is I get more emails than any human being can answer. So I've got Tiffany manages, you know, like three inboxes. And then I manage one. But right now, if you go to that inbox, and the funny part is it was a couple of years ago where I'm like, Tiffany, I can't keep up with my emails. So I gave her my inbox and I said, I'll just set up a new private inbox that only a few people have. Well, I don't know how there's 4,401 unread messages. I'm looking at the alert right now in that inbox. And I'll blame it on the cancer the last year. They stacked up.
Yeah.
I was
unconscious. Yeah, you had a little something going on there.
You know, that's a huge area of improvement. So what I've had to do, and I think this is for everybody, or this is a tip for everybody, is, well, I heard actually it was from our good friend, my business partner, John Berghoff, and he was giving a speech like 10 years ago. And he said, the average CEO has, at any given time, it's like over 400 hours of incomplete work that they could get done, should get done. And of course, that you can never get 400 hours of incomplete work done, right? And that is emails. That is, you know, I mean, that's phone call. There's a lot to that. And so the lesson I took from that, and I don't know if it was what John said or just what I took from it, but was that you have to be okay with not what you don't. You don't have to stress about what you don't get done. You just have to make sure you get the most important things done. And so for me, every day, and I use the 5-minute journal, and one of the questions in the morning is, what are the three most important things that you get done today?
Yes.
And I look at my to-do list of, you know, 59 things or 12 things or whatever. And I go, okay, of everything on here, what are the three that I'm going to get done? And it was a real shift because I'm a perfectionist by nature, and I've really let that go, where now I just make sure that I get those three things done. And sometimes it's one, sometimes it's five, whatever. But I make sure that I get the must-dos done. And then I just go to sleep happy and content. Another big thing is I used to work until, you know, I was exhausted and couldn't look at the screen on my computer anymore, you know, 10, 9, 10 at night. And then my wife one day was like, hey, we're having a baby pretty soon. You know, you can't be like, I'm going to need help. You can't be working all day. And so I backed my work time down to 6 p.m. and eventually 5 p.m. And I just went, it goes back to that same mindset. At 5 p.m., I will always have more work that needs to get done. At 9 p.m., yeah, I'll have almost just as much work that needs to get done. So the reality is, what's the priority in my life? Is it living? Jason Mraz has a line in one of his songs. He says, life is for living. And I love that because it's like, no, it's not for working. Like, productivity should not be our number one priority. And it is for most of us. And this last year, and I know we didn't really go into this, but I was diagnosed with a very rare form of cancer. As you know, I was given a 30% chance of living, and I am now cancer free after the most difficult year of my life and the best year of my life. I learned a lot. But one of the biggest realizations I had was that I valued productivity as like my number one, meaning it was above health. And it was above family. Now, I wouldn't have thought that, or I wasn't aware of that. I wouldn't have said that. If someone said, what's your number one priority? I'd say family. Absolutely. No question to ask. But if you look at my schedule, it goes, well, it doesn't really reflect that. Your schedule looks like work's your number one priority because you work most of your time and you spend, you know, whatever's left over with the family. And it's usually not really that much. And it's at the end of the day when I'm exhausted, it's not really quality time. And so same thing with health. I realized that when I had a project due, if I was tired, right? Let me ask you, Alyssa, if you're feeling tired, what's your body probably telling you that you should do?
Rest.
Rest.
What my body's telling you to do.
And what do most of us entrepreneurs do? We take drink some caffeine. Sort of stimulant, drink caffeine, right? And I realize that I'm valuing productivity above health. And that's why very successful people, you know, like, and I, you know, use Steve Jobs as an example, but I'm not saying I know why, right? But he got cancer and he, you know, he passed away from it. But just in general, many successful people drop dead from heart attacks, right? And it's, if you are valuing productivity above your health and you do that for a long period of time, you know, it's only a matter of time before your body says, all right, if you're not going to stop yourself, I'm going to stop you. And I think that's what happened to me, you know? But now family is number one. I play with my son first thing in the morning when he wakes up every morning, you know, which used to be at the end of the day. Now in the middle of my work, you know, my miracle morning, I just stop and we go play, you know, and I play at the end of the day. Like I take much more time off, and I just have a much more relaxed mentality where I'm not like, I have to get everything done on my list and it's never enough. And, you know, I'll say this last thing. And this is sometimes how I close a podcast, so I'm going early here. But most of us wish we were further ahead than we are, right? We often look at other entrepreneurs, you know, people in our space, you know, maybe like a Gary Vaynerchuk or Brendan Burchard, you know, and we or Tony Robbins, you know, when I was coming up as a speaker, and we create separation, like, oh, they're so much better than me, smarter than me, more successful than me, more experienced than me. They have such a bigger email list than me. Like, oh my gosh, if only I was like them. And I think that the best thing to do is to use those people as evidence, not separation. So evidence of what's possible for us over a long period of time. That if another human being has accomplished something, then we can, by doing similar or the same things, accomplish similar or the same results. And here's what I found, is that we all have this monkey on our back that says, I got it, you know, I'm not where I want to be. I want to be where I want to be now. We always want to be, well, you know, we have the vision for our life. And it's almost, think about this, it's almost like every day when the day ends, we check in, we're like, am I a millionaire yet? Or am I a famous author or podcaster or whatever yet? Nope, damn it, I failed again. Mm-hmm. Right? And we might not have that conscious dialogue, but unconsciously, like, that's the monkey on our back, is I'm not where I want to be. I'm, you know, I am a failure in some regard. And here's what I've found, is that when you finally get to the point in your life, in your business that you've been working for so hard and for so long, you almost never wish it would have happened any sooner.
Yeah.
And when you get there, you go, oh, it was supposed to happen exactly like this. And then you go, why the f- did I stress myself out almost every day for the last 10 years trying to get here? What is waste of energy? I probably cut 5 years off my life with all that stress. Mm-hmm. And so I'd encourage everybody to really be at peace with where you are, even if that's 500 grand in debt, whatever. Be at peace with where you are, because you're alive. And that's what matters more than anything else. If you're alive, that's what matters. You have your health, you have your relationships. Those should be, I think, on the top two in terms of your priorities, and productivity should come below those two. Productivity should be, it's important, but you should be productive in your health and productive in the quality of your relationships, and then your business should come after that. And I encourage you to be at peace with where you are, and yes, maintain a healthy sense of urgency to get where you want to go, but not urgency that comes from scarcity, right? Meaning I'm not enough, I'm not where I want to be, but urgency that comes from abundance, yeah. Which is, yeah, I'm working my butt off because there's a vision, there's a mission, and I'm on this journey, and I'm committed to it. And every day I'm a little bit of progress, get a little bit further than I was yesterday, become better as myself, a better person, better version of myself, and make progress, measurable progress towards my goals, my vision, my dreams, you know, et cetera. And I think that when we can, and by the way, don't just hear that, write it down in an affirmation. I'll say that again. When we finally get to the place that we've been working hard, so hard for so long, we almost never wish it would have happened any sooner. Instead, we see the perfection in our journey. And, you know, and so because of that, be at peace with where you are and maintain a healthy sense of urgency toward where you want to go, but not from a place of scarcity, but one of abundance.
That's
so
beautiful.
You have to rewind the podcast a few times to write that down.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite books is The Alchemist, for exactly that reason. Because it is all about the journey and all of the lessons learned along the way. One thing I want to point to is the tendency to value productivity, right? Even when we say to ourselves, you know, my health is important, my family's important, you know, all of these things are important, but we, with our time and our energy, value productivity. And in part, that's a learned trait because our society tells us we must produce. Now, do we want to be a contributing member of society? Of course. But here's the thing, is that measuring our level of relationship, our depth of our relationship with our children is not easy. Like it's not like you can benchmark, how am I doing as a parent today? Right. And so, sure. And so spending time to figure out, how do I value and measure how I'm doing, like, what's the litmus test for how I'm doing as a mom? What's the litmus test as to what, how I'm doing as a spouse? And you have to figure that out for yourself. But I would encourage you, if your spouse, if your marriage, if your kids, if your health are actually in your top five values, that you figure out a way to go, hey, how am I doing here? Am I showing that my family, that they are actually a priority? And it's a real challenge. And Hal, I know you are so passionate about the Miracle Morning movement and really elevating the consciousness of humanity one morning at a time. And you're also passionate about your family. And I feel the same way about my work. Like, I'm not an entrepreneur so that I don't work ever. I'm an entrepreneur because I have a message that I think that people really need to hear, that they're amazing and that they're perfectly lopsided. Like, and to really be a conduit for that message. And so I don't want to stop working, but yet I don't want to stop being the best wife and best mom to my family either. And so, you know, it's important to keep that harmony. And I always talk about harmony because there is no balance. Because in balance, like if you look at a scale, like one side is either down or the other side is down. Like there is never, there's always a lose, right? It's when you balance things, you don't have a win-win. When you harmonize it, suddenly you can get all of the instruments in the orchestra to be playing the same tune. And now it's freaking beautiful. Right. Yeah. So I would encourage you in this productivity driven, achievement driven society, and that's not all bad, to look and see, hey, what is the measure? What is the proof that my relationship with my husband, my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my children is awesome? You know, is it, you know, the smile on their face in the morning? Is it, you know, my kid texted me in the middle of the school day just to say, hey, mom, I wanted to say I love you. Like, to me, that's a measure that my child wants to connect with me. You know, things like that. So figure out what the measure is for you so that you can actually prioritize with your time, with your energy, your family, and then check in with them. Hey, how am I doing?
And that's the best way, I think, to find the measure is ask them what the measure is.
Right.
Right. What's their love language? What do they, you know, right? How am I doing as a husband? How am I doing as a wife? How am I doing as a parent? And ask the kids and ask, you know, and then time is a very quantifiable measurement, right? Are you spending time with your family? And another thing that I'll just throw in there is, one thing that I did this year, going into the new year, and this is kind of a post-cancer, you know, being in alignment with my values, is I gravitate toward business books like most of us probably do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what is exciting, is learning new business strategies. So I gravitate toward business books. Well, I made a commitment to myself and I've honored it every single day that I'm not allowed to read a business book until I've read 10 pages out of a parenting or a marriage book. And so that's every morning. I have to read 10 pages out of a parenting or marriage book. And then once I do, then I can, you know, I can dive into a business book, but not until.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we didn't talk much about your cancer journey, in part because you have conquered it. And I love, but I do want to touch on a couple of things. You didn't have a great shot at beating this thing. I mean, the statistics were technically against you, and yet your whole attitude all the way through it. And this was so impactful for me. I am in your Miracle Morning community, and the day that you shared with the community about your diagnosis, you talked about, you know, that you had this diagnosis and it's scary, and it's you were really vulnerable and honest about the fear of the possibility, the reality of leaving your wife and your children behind. And yet through all of that, there was such a beautiful, positive, and you know what, we're all going to be okay. And you signed it, best day ever, Hal. And I now sign all of my emails, best day ever, because it's a reminder to me that, you know what, if I'm breathing, it is the best day ever.
Yeah.
And we know that mindset is an actual risk factor for cancer and for beating cancer as well. And not to say that if you have a loved one that has unfortunately not beat cancer, that they weren't positive enough. So I really want to make sure that you guys hear that. But Hal, on those really hard days where you felt like garbage and it was hard to see the bright side of things, what was it for you that got you through and got you sort of back on the positivity wagon, as it were. How did you get through those hard days?
So I'm glad you're asking this, and I've got a great answer that's actionable for people. But first, it was really my family. You know, it was like when I didn't feel like when I was in pain or sick or weak or, you know, whatever, it was, I mean, because there were times where in the moment, you know, I would have never taken my life, but there were times where I'm like, I'd rather be dead than enduring this right now. Mm-hmm. And in those moments, it was like, well, it's about my family. It's not even about me. I'm here for my kids. I would never leave them. So stop thinking that, you know, I mean, just let that go. But here's the biggest lesson for all of us when we are going through times of adversity, is just to remind ourselves that it's temporary. Because for whatever reason, as human beings, we're not wired that way. When we are experiencing anything, like if you've ever, you know, if you're listening to this right now, think about if you ever had your heart broken, if you ever went through a breakup, even like in junior high, where it felt like the world was over and what was the point of going on, and your emotions were so overwhelmingly, you know, negative or painful that it just felt like that's the new reality. Like our brain doesn't have it's not very good at realizing that, hey, this is temporary. I don't need to freak out or make a big deal out of it, because in 3 weeks I won't care, or in 3 days or whatever, right? That's really it, is whenever I'm feeling any negative state of mind or emotional state, I always just go, it's temporary. And I smile and I go, I, you know, don't just let it pass. Like, let it pass. I know that I'm not going to feel this way forever. I recently had to do this with, I got that flu going around where I was bedridden for 2 weeks. It was horrible. I've never been sick that long or anything like that. In fact, my buddy came to visit. He got sick from me, and he goes, man, he sent me this video. It was really sweet. And he goes, you just went through what, he goes, I feel so terrible. I can't even imagine what you went through the last year with cancer. And I text him back. I said, Jeremy, buddy, it wasn't this is actually as bad as going through chemo. Like this, buddy, you know what I went through now. It was for a year, not 2 weeks, but this sucks. Yeah. But I just kept having to remind myself, you know, and my wife helped me, because when you're in that state, it's hard, you know? But she's like, sweetheart, you're not going to be sick forever. Like, you know, I'm like, but what if I am? My immune system is still so destroyed from the cancer. Like, what if I can't heal?
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, but again, that for me, I think whenever we're going through adversity, that's the most valuable mindset, is that whatever it is that you're going through is temporary.
Yeah.
Unless you choose to stay there, you know, forever.
Right.
You don't,
which we could choose. We could choose to be, you know, sort of a victim of our own circumstances, or we can choose to be responsible to ourselves and to our goals and to our family in that moment. And it's not an easy choice, but it is a choice that we can make. And, you know, you talked about emotions. Positivity in specific is a really large feeling strength theme. Like your emotions are just big when you have positivity. I have positivity. You have positivity. I have big emotions, which means that when we walk into a room, the entire room is like, whoa, there's energy in this room. And equally, if you're really mad, like that also carries like just big, big emotions. And one of the things that I have had to learn is to not let my emotions be my boss. And in specific, if you have tried the miracle morning and you're like, I just can't do it. I just can't get out of bed. You know, that you try something just a little bit different. One of the books I recently read was Mel Robbins, The 5 Second Rule.
5 Second Rule, yeah.
And, you know, she in the book, she talks about how she has been doing the 5 Second Rule for 7 years and she still hates getting up in the morning. And I was like, well, thank God. There's nobody else who hates getting up in the morning. She's like, but guess what? Like, it doesn't matter, because my emotions don't get to run my day. I am the boss of my morning. So I have actually added that to my affirmations. And even though I've been a part of the Miracle Morning, I learned about you first in January of 2016, Hal, and have been working at the Miracle Morning since then, and really have been on again, off again, like waiting for myself to want to jump out of bed. And for some reason, you know, hearing Mel say that she still hates mornings, but once she's vertical, she's good. That I've been using the 5 Second Rule in collaboration with the Miracle Morning. And I am truly the boss of my morning. So ladies and gents, you don't have to like it. Just do it. Don't let your emotions run you. Let your commitment be bigger than your current emotions. So that's all I have to say about emotions.
And by the way, with Mel, do you know that Mel Robbins, we featured her in the Miracle Morning documentary?
No.
Yeah. So her and I were speaking at an event together, and backstage, I think she saw me speak first, and then she came up and said, "Hey, Lewis Howes brought you up the other day in a conversation and blah, blah, blah." And, you know, so we connected and she told me about the 5 second rule, and I go, "That's perfect for the Miracle Morning." Like, you know, right? I mean, because it really goes really well with it. It's like, how do you get yourself, because that's, she invented it to get herself out of bed, mm-hmm. right? So big fan of Mel as well.
Yeah, it was perfect. And it was one of those aha moments where I kind of smacked myself in the head. I'm like, I know this, but yet somehow I still was waiting for my positivity to kind of kick in be like, oh, of course I want to get out of the morning. I get out of my bed. And quite frankly, my bed is super, super comfortable. I don't want to. However, I'm more committed to working out and my business and my family than I am to being comfortable in my bed. So that was a real relief, I guess.
Well, and that's probably, you know, it's interesting, but there's a chapter in the Miracle Morning book called the 5 Steps Snooze-Proof Wake-Up Strategy.
Yes.
And it's arguably the most important chapter in the book.
It's chapter 5.
Because it's the chapter that says, okay, if you've never been a morning person, how do you beat that alarm? How do you get yourself out of bed in the easiest way possible? And we surveyed the Miracle Morning community, as you mentioned, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of people. And I was really surprised. I said, because I got asked in an interview, they said, what percentage of Miracle Morning practitioners were already morning people when they read the book? So it was really easy. They just changed what they did in the morning. And what percentage of them had never been a morning person, to where this was a real radical, like overcoming a limiting belief that they had a lifetime of evidence of saying, no, I'm definitely not a morning person. Mm-hmm. Check the last, you know, 20 years or whatever. And I didn't know the answer. So we surveyed the community. And I was kind of blown away. 72% said they had never in their life been able to become a morning person until they read The Miracle Morning.
Yeah.
And that little chapter, which was actually a blog post that I turned into a chapter, it's probably the shortest chapter in the book. It's like 4 pages, mm-hmm. but it's the linchpin, because the rest of the book is like, wow, your eyes are open to how the morning is arguably the single most important change you can make, or improvement you can make, or upgrade you can make in your life that will affect everything. Your health, your happiness, your everything. And so people are convinced of that, but if it wasn't for that little chapter that teaches you how to get out of bed and beat the snooze button, I think that the majority of people would be like, I tried the Miracle Morning for like a few days, but I just fell back in my routine. Once that initial excitement wore off, but now they've got that strategy. And I know we're almost out of time, but I will share the most important of those 5 steps, in my opinion, is move your alarm clock. So if you're what I call a snoozeaholic, move your alarm clock as far across the room as possible. And mine is in my bath. You know, I have my bathroom's attached to my bedroom, and I keep the door open and so I can hear it. But think about it. When the alarm goes off in the morning, if you can reach over and hit the snooze button while you're still half asleep, that's what you're going to do probably 99% of the time. By the way, myself included. Mm-hmm. But if you have to stand up and get out of bed and walk across the room, you're 5 times more awake than you are when you're reaching across on your bedside table. I mean, how many times have we hit the snooze button and then we wake up, you know, an hour late or half an hour late, and we go, how the hell did that happen? Like, we don't even know that we hit the snooze button 5 times because we were so out of it when we did it.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest tip for everybody is, you know, start the Miracle Morning, move the alarm clock across the room, and then you're out of bed. And then, of course, your next step from there, and that's one of the steps, is go straight to the bathroom sink, you know, brush your teeth, and give yourself a chance to, you know, wake yourself up. And it's every minute that you're awake, it's easier to stay awake.
Amen.
So, you know, so if you're up for a few minutes just to walk across the room, brush your teeth, it's easier to stay awake. You don't have to, you're not so drawn to the bed as you are when you're laying in the bed, right?
So. Yeah. Oh man, there's so many more questions, Hal, that I want to ask you, but I want to honor our time. I know that we've got a hard stop here. I got to let you go.
We can do one more.
Okay. So what is the future of the Miracle Morning movement?
Great question. So the Miracle Morning, it has become a movement, and it wasn't a plan for that. I just wrote the book because the Miracle Morning changed my life, and I felt a sense of responsibility to pay it forward and help other people. And I didn't think it would be even a bestseller. I mean, I just was like, well, this will help a few people. I don't know. it grew beyond what I ever imagined. And the future is just impacting more people. And the reason is there's nothing that I've ever created for the world, no audio, video, speech, book, nothing I've ever contributed to the world that has impacted people both as in quantity, meaning, you know, we have I think the Miracle Morning has sold 600,000 copies now, and it's published in, now it's up to 30 something languages. And, you know, it's over 100 countries, roughly 500,000 people practice it every day. I mean, it just blows my mind. And it was actually our mutual friend, Nick Conadera, that reached out and said, Hal, you want to change, you know, elevate the consciousness of humanity one morning at a time. Let me ask you a question. What percentage of people read self-help books? I said, I don't know, like 5% or less. He said, what percentage of people watch movies? I was like, probably the other 95%, you know? And he said, so let's make a documentary and go beyond the book, and we can reach more people. And I was like, that's a brilliant idea. And so the Miracle Morning documentary, we're going to debut it if we're accepted into the festival we just submitted. But Illuminate Film Festival, which is the largest conscious film festival that I think in the world, that it just so happened that it's on my birthday is the festival. I don't think that's a coincidence. And so it looks like we'll be debuting the Miracle Morning movie at the festival May 30th. And then from there, I'll be working on, you know, theater releases and getting it on Netflix and iTunes. But still, the Miracle Morning book, you know, roughly 10,000 people every single month, and even a little more usually, you know, read the book. Yeah. And then I get emails. I have thousands of emails saying that it's saved their marriage, helped them overcome depression, get off their medication, start their business they've been putting off for years, finally write the book that was in their, you know, on their bucket list. I mean, it blows me away. So I'm fully committed. Health, family, Miracle Morning mission. I mean, that's kind of the order, you know, for me.
That's perfect. Well, I cherish you. I honor you. I am so grateful for the Miracle Morning. All six of the savers. In fact, I am now exercising 6 days a week, I should tell you.
Yeah.
Now. So that's a big shift, a big change. And I just can't wait to be along for the ride. I will be 100% a shouting from the rooftop supporter as we move on in this Miracle Morning mission. So thank you. Thank you for all your time. Thank you for all your passion and your energy that you put into this. We collectively appreciate you.
Ditto. Thank you. Thanks for your leadership, Alyssa. I appreciate you. Love you. And thanks for having me on.
And now it's time for the podcast recommendation of the week. Part of the Miracle Morning, as Hal and I talked about in the episode today, is mindfulness or meditation. Now, how do you be mindful throughout the day? How do you carry that amazing Miracle Morning forward? The podcast recommendation of the week this week is The Mindfulness Mode with Bruce Langford. Bruce interviews people from all walks of life to learn how they remain mindful throughout the day. I like it because of the variety of guests. It helps me think outside the box of my own mindfulness and gets me thinking just a little bit different because I want to carry my Miracle Morning forward throughout my day. Bruce is a great interviewer and his guest stories are fantastic. You can find The Mindfulness Mode on iTunes or anywhere else you love to listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd be honored if you'd leave a review over on iTunes. Every single review means the world to me. To know you're listening and to know you're finding value makes this whole thing worthwhile. And hey, while you're over there, click on subscribe to make sure you're notified of future episodes. Until next time, keep being frickin' awesome.